In this episode, I want to give a very brief overview of the subject of witchcraft, where we've dealt with magic, and traditionally it's a very masculine endeavour. Witchcraft was more of the feminine, although a male witch was called a warlock. But witches tend to be the fantastic idea of the old hag living on her own in the woods, who makes potions and casts spells. And there's a lot of misconceptions. The play by Shakespeare, Macbeth, gives us the image of a coven of three witches stood around a cauldron, throwing in all sorts of herbs and parts of animals and things like that to make spells, rituals and potions. And they would also trick people. They could use hypnotism to make a prince think that he was a frog, which is similar to the hypnotherapy we see today and stage entertainment. But really, the old spinster living in the woods was the type of natural herbal woman who would be a healer and a psychic, very intuitive. And male patriarchal systems don't allow women, mostly because they know that women are highly intuitive. Men like to lie to each other. They like to be able to feed each other rubbish. So politicians, businessmen, they use misdirection so they can carry out their other plans without being noticed. A woman would be able to intuitively know that they weren't telling the truth. It's easier for men to fool other men. And for that reason, as well as many others, women were kept out of meetings. And the highly intuitive woman would have to keep this to herself because of these patriarchal systems. The old lady living in the woods tended to be childless. So when children went missing, they used to get the blame. And unfortunately, there are many magical and witchcraft traditions which do use human sacrifice. And that is in our distant past, but there are rumours today of this still going on. And witchcraft ends up taking the blame. But witchcraft, as we know it, really is from our pagan roots. And when the Christian church came to fruition and 2,000 years ago, it tried to abolish a lot of pagan practices, but it also usurped many for themselves. A lot of Christian traditions are based on pagan practices, but the ones that they decided not to keep were outlawed and come under the banner of witchcraft. Traditionally, the old lady living in the woods using the herbs would be called upon now and then, even by the priests, to help assist in healing people. Especially, they would be seen as the midwife, and they would help deliver a lot of babies. So a lot of the time people were tolerated because they were very useful, even though they might have been quite scary to people. When people were really sick and really in dire need, the old herbal medicine woman was called upon time and time again. So although we make a real distinction, there's a lot of grey areas. And so the traditions were kept alive, regardless of the Christian church. And if you look at many of the traditions that we still have, such as the Maypole and the Morris Men in the UK, these are ancient pagan traditions that were kept alive because they're about the fertility rituals involving the sun, the moon, the stars, and agriculture at the equinoxes when the sun makes its transition from summer to autumn, autumn to winter, winter to spring, spring to summer. These ancient pagan traditions are still kept alive. And with them, many of the ancient Wiccan and witchcraft traditions run alongside. If we look at Halloween especially, we've kept that one alive because we believe that this is a very important time of year. It's supposed to be the time which the veil is at its thinnest. Now, I believe this is a bit of a misconception. What traditionally happens is there would be the harvest, and rye was one of the main crops that we would grow. Then something would happen, and rye can begin to go moldy. And if you make bread with moldy rye, there's something called ergot. We derive LSD, the hallucinogen, from ergot. And what would happen is the poorer people would be forced to use the moldy rye to make their bread, and they would have these hallucinations, usually round about the end of October. So it was believed that the veil was at its thinnest and people would be possessed by evil spirits, and witches were involved. And what would happen is the locals would round up the crazy people, throw them on a fire, and burn them all. And this would be bonfire night, because the following day, all that was left were the bones and the ashes. This tradition stems back far further than Guy Fawkes Night, and it has been kept going ever since. But the witches did have a working knowledge of the mold. They would use psychedelics themselves to have communion with nature spirits. But rather than ingesting them orally and feeling very sick, they would put this hallucinogen on a broomstick and insert it into their private parts. That way they would have this experience, but it wouldn't be quite as powerful and it wouldn't make them sick. And this is where the flying broomstick comes in and where this image comes from. But psychedelics have been used by priests and witches for many thousands of years. A gentleman called John Mark Allegro wrote a book about the sacred use of mushrooms, believed to be Amanita muscaria, the toadstool mushrooms, as well as magic mushrooms like psilocybin. And he wrote a book on it based on his studies of the Nag Hammadi scriptures, or the Dead Sea Scrolls, which he helped to translate. And there is also Brian Merorescu, who's written a book recently, also charting psychedelic use in religious practices over many thousands of years. These practices ended up becoming more witchcraft during the Middle Ages because the churches, the Christian churches especially, stopped using these psychedelics and used scripture alone to base their religion on. And they lost a lot of the enlightenment that comes with using psychedelics. Not that I encourage the use of them, they're very dangerous, but they have been used for many centuries and millennia by the priests of all different types of denominations and religious expressions. The Druids, especially, hark back many thousands of years. And there are still many modern druids because the tradition was kept alive by men through secret societies. But when it came to women, witchcraft was handed down very secretly, and you would normally find that there'd be individual practitioners rather than groups. And although we have an image of the coven, it's usually the individual practitioner, and they would just intuitively work with herbs, working out what works and what doesn't. These potions that they made were mostly for healing. And even though the Christian church tried to stamp out all witchcraft, as I said before, quite often they'd be called upon to help where other remedies couldn't. And there was a certain amount of tolerance. But somewhere in the sort of dark ages, that tolerance wore thin. And the Salem witch trials is now believed that there was a very bad crop that year. And the rye bread was to blame. And there were also quite a few witch trials in England around that 1700s. And eventually we decided that the way we were treating witches was inappropriate. And the more modern society, which had a legal system, decided to introduce the Witchcraft Act of 1735. And now witches could be imprisoned or hung for their crimes. But there was a slightly more mature attitude and approach than there had been before. And so this law was used for many years, and it drove witchcraft a little bit more underground. And fast forward to World War II, and the last time someone was tried under the Witchcraft Act was the story of Helen Duncan, the spiritualist medium. Well, she'll come up many times in these podcasts as she's quite a central figure to the movement of spiritualism. But it was decided at the time that the Witchcraft Act was inappropriate for modern use. It was quite an embarrassment for the legal system to be using it. So they tried her under the Vagrancy Act instead. And it was decided to abolish the Witchcraft Act, and the Fraudulent Mediums Act of 1952 was introduced. This left open a new influx of Wiccan practitioners. A gentleman called Gerald Gardner decided to start writing books on Wicca. Now it was legally open to do so. And the first high priestess of those times was Doreen Valiente. And between them, we ended up with the modern Wiccan movement, and it was put into the written word. Gerald Gardner was also a Freemason, friends with Aleister Crowley and the Golden Dawn. And so many of the practices of modern Wicca overlap greatly with the magical practices of these other organisations. And through the 60s, there was the flower power movement, the hippie movement. A lot of free love, a lot of psychedelics, and there was a lot of overlap between witchcraft and these new modern expressions of freedom. And what we ended up with in the modern day is a completely different type of witch. She's a more modern, suburban woman who's probably married, children, but also practices with tarot cards, crystals, and herbal remedies. It's a far more sedate and modern version of witchcraft, which intermingles with suburban culture. We also see hypnotherapy, neuro-linguistic programming, and cognitive behavioral therapy being used, as well as psychedelic therapy for people with post-traumatic stress disorder. These are all ancient witchcraft traditions that are found a sensible, scientific, modern usage, which we understand much better now. So we can look back at the ancient witchcraft with a new lens and a new light, that maybe the ancient witch wasn't so out of context, that it wasn't all evil and spells and witchcraft. There was actually some real common sense to it all. And people kept witches around because they were useful. The things they did actually worked, and now we know how and why much better. And we can also see some of the misconceptions, such as the mouldy rye bread causing the hallucinations. And we can look at those traditions in a much clearer light. If you go to any town centre around the country, you'll see a crystal shop, or where you'll find all different products and Wiccan-based paraphernalia. There are a lot of people practicing very light witchcraft, but there is thought to be quite a few covens where, you know, a sisterhood where three or more girls get together and they have these evenings where they try to manifest their realities. They make up vision boards. They will write down little notes and then burn them in a little ritual. And this is all modern outpouring of a very ancient witchcraft tradition. So it's still being practiced in a more modern context. And for better or worse, it seems to be doing younger women the world of good to understand that they can use their psychic gifts. Their intuition shouldn't be stamped out, it should be encouraged and flourished. And where we've got the modern spiritualist movement, many men and women are using their mediumship, are using their gifts. And like mediumship, witchcraft used to find there was only one. Now in every community you have quite a number of young women and older women using their gifts, practicing these little rituals, using their herbal remedies and healing and oils far more. Aromatherapy is very much part of the Wicca tradition, as well as massage and therapy such as acupuncture, that stems from an ancient pagan tradition as well, even though we've brought much over from the East. One of the ancient traditions was bloodletting. You used to go to the person who kept leeches, and the leeches would pull the bad blood out. That then evolved into the local barber, and the barber would make a small incision, let it bleed, and then use hot towels to close it up. That ended up just becoming the hairdressers. But the barber was an ancient tradition that had a modern context. We seem to have lost a little bit of it along the way, but now we've brought in a lot of Eastern traditions that run alongside our old pagan ones, such as Chinese herbal medicine, such as cupping and acupuncture. All of them, we had our own versions in the pagan traditions, both in the UK and in Europe. So what the Wiccan tradition is doing is trying to bring back those European and British traditions which go hand in hand with the Eastern traditions that we accepted so easily. Wicca was about to take off in the 60s until Buddhism came over to Europe and to the Americas. Buddhism replaced religion for a lot of people because it didn't have a lot of the same judgmental traditions. It didn't class the Buddha as a god in the same way that Christianity classed God. So people were more accepting of it, and it gave the European and the American a new outpouring because they were still a little bit apprehensive about Wiccan traditions. So fast forward to this New Age movement we're in today and this great awakening that's going on. More and more Wicca and witchcraft is being seen in a modern context, in a safe natural environment where people can use it for healing therapies, and it's actually having a very good impact on people who are suffering with depression and anxiety, who are finding it hard to cope with the pressures that have been put on them from expectations. Wicca is especially helping people help themselves. And you'll find so many self-help books that have these little exercises which you used to find only in Wicca and only in witchcraft that the Christian church could not accept and could not validate. Now we have these freedoms and we have this New Age movement. It's going to be very interesting to see how it evolves and flourishes. Although we're going through this great awakening, we're still holding on to some of these traditions because we know that they're valuable, we know that they work, and we know that we need to keep a connection with our ancient roots, because if you don't know where you come from, you can't see where you're going. We need to hold on to what works, what does heal us, and understand it better and evolve it rather than prohibit it like we have done with psychedelics and drugs. I believe we need to open up our minds and our hearts to a new way of thinking with these ancient traditions. They were very valuable to people in the past, and they're becoming very valuable to us now. And as this great awakening takes place, more and more people are going to be able to accept these new forms of therapy and these new forms of working with herbs and remedies, and have a more natural experience rather than the processed foods and the pharmaceuticals that we've been relying on for the last 40 or 50 years. We're also seeing a much more positive attitude to the environment. People are starting to question what they're eating, question where their food comes from, and how agriculture has turned into an industry, and how we can go back to those old ways and farm in a more biodynamic way. And hopefully in the next 20 years, we're going to see huge revolutions in the way that we choose what we eat, choose what pharmaceuticals we accept, and go for a more herbal, natural way of working. And we are legally free to use our intuition to give each other psychic readings. For many years, the old ladies with their tea leaves was the only acceptable form of divination, and even that was done very quietly. Now we have a modern spiritualist movement being investigated and validated by science. Modern witchcraft, modern magical traditions, as well as a down-to-earth approach to spirit communication, is going to see the next few years of our human story flourish and become something greater. Whatever it is we're transforming into, witchcraft is playing a very significant role.